Well, this is a word that we learn about in our Christian calling, discernment. We have to discern the truth. We're called as a people of God, and God, He's fit to where He places us in the church of God, and we have to discern the truth continually through our lives. Here's a photo of a church congregation. I took this back in 2007, or someone took it back, and we were at this feast in 2007 in France. Maybe Mr. Hendricks might be in that photo. He might be there. We were there. And in this photo are some members who are not with the church anymore for various reasons. A few have died. Some went to another congregation, another fellowship after 2010. But there have been splits and divisions in the church as has occurred even here in this congregation that we had the feast with back in 2007. You know, God has put leaders in place where He sees fit over the flock of God. And it is the ministry's chief task to feed the flock of God, but also us as we look to those leaders that we discern where they are coming from, in a sense, that we know that they are of God, the ones whom God has chosen to feed us and to lead us. You know, Jesus Christ said, "My sheep hear my voice, and they follow me." This is what Jesus Christ said. So we, as sheep of God, know the voice of our Master, and we follow Him. Here is a photo of a flock of sheep. And Christ also tells us that we should take heed that no one deceives you. For many come in my name, saying, "I am the Christ," and they'll deceive many. We know that verse very well. That's from Matthew 24, when the disciples asked, "When will be this time of your coming?" And He said this. In other words, discern. Discernment. It's not long after the church began that false doctrine started to creep in. And Paul acknowledges this when he says farewell to the Ephesian brethren. You remember that story when he met the Ephesian brethren? It's in Acts chapter 20. And in fact, during the presentation later, we'll show you photos of the exact spot where this happened, where he said, "Take heed to yourselves and all the flock and among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers." He's saying this to the leaders of the flock, to shepherd the church of God, which He has purchased with His own blood, as He's telling the leaders. "For I know this," this is again Acts chapter 20, "that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock." Wolves will come in among you. This trouble intensified in the latter part of the first century, and even compelled the disciples to put it in their epistles, or to address it in their epistles. Jude wrote his epistles right before Revelation, and he said, "I found it necessary to write to you, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith which was once delivered to the saints, for certain men have crept in unnoticed." So what we saw in what we see in scriptures is those false leaders coming in among the flock. And these, as Jude continues, they speak evil of what they don't know. And whatever they know naturally, like brute beast, they corrupt themselves. They're talking basically out of their own head. And then he says this, "Woe to them." This is Jude 11. "For they have gone in the way of Cain. They have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit. And they have perished in the rebellion of Korah." So we have this example of Israel complaining. And Jude says, "Woe to them, they have perished in the rebellion of Korah." So this is a picture of kind of representing the rebellion of Korah, which Jude holds up as an example for us to discern. Discern. Most of us are familiar with the story of Korah's rebellion. It's in Numbers chapter 16, and we're going to go through this story today because this story is an example for us in discerning truth and error. Those whom God has chosen versus those who he has not. This is the title of this message today, Korah's Rebellion, a lesson in discernment. I think you'll see with me as we go through here and see this story that it is a help for us, as Jude points out and uses it as an example of those whom we need to discern between, ministers of God and ministers of Satan. So let's look through this story. Let's go first now, if you're there with me in Numbers 16, come with me to the verse. This is a very dramatic story. I think we're all familiar with it, what happened here in the wilderness, how the complaining is pictured in that slide a few moments ago. They rebelled, the leaders rebelled against Moses. It is clear in the story whom God has chosen. It is also clear who is the self-appointed leader. So let's look at it. Verse 1 of Numbers 16, starting here. Now Korah, the son of Issachar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, so he gives his genealogy, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. So Korah and the sons of Reuben took men. And verse 2, they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, men of renown. Well, who are these men? Well, it tells us right there who they are. Why do they think they could rise up against Moses? Well, first of all, if we think about it, Dathan, Abiram, and On, sons of Reuben, they're from the leading tribe of, well, let me say, the firstborn tribe of Jacob. Reuben was Jacob's firstborn. And therefore, they may think, well, you know, we're of the firstborn tribe, and therefore, maybe this was the reason. We think we have a right to the leadership. And who is Korah? Well, let's take a look here. If you'll hold your place there in Numbers 16, come with me over to Exodus chapter 6. And we'll look, Exodus chapter 6, we'll look at Korah's genealogy a little further and see something here. Perhaps you've seen this before. Verse 16 of Exodus chapter 6. These are the names of the sons of Levi according to their generation. So, of course, Levi is a son of Jacob. And he has three sons, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. Exodus 6, verse 16. And then verse 18. Verse 18 now. And the sons of Kohath, okay, Kohath, one of the sons of Levi, were Amram, Issachar, Hebron, and Uzziel. Four sons of Kohath, who was the son of Levi. And now, verse 20, Amram, one of the sons of Kohath, took for himself Jochebed, verse 20, his father's sister as wife, and she bore him Aaron and Moses. So Amram, son of Kohath, son of Levi, bore through Jochebed Aaron and Moses. And now verse 21. And the sons of Issachar, this was Kohath's other son, the brother of Amram, Issachar, were Korah, Nepheg, and Zichri. So if you're following along with that, it's very clear. Korah is Moses' first cousin. First cousin. And therefore you may think, okay, well, I'm from the tribe of Levi, and not only that, I'm from the leading family. And therefore I have a right to stand up and take some leadership position here. Is this the motive? It appears to be that they felt that they deserved to be in a position of authority. And here's another photo showing, well, it's a rendering really, some artist rendered this. This is Korah with Dathan and Abiram. And these men, as Numbers 16, now we'll go back to Numbers 16, tells us, these men, they took men and rose up before Moses. They were going to tell Moses what's what. And so they did. We're back in Numbers 16 now, going to verse 3 of the story that we go through here. And they gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, this is Korah and his compatriots. They gathered together and said, you take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then, Moses and Aaron, do you exalt yourself above the assembly of the Lord? And this is their complaint. They are accusing Moses and Aaron of placing themselves above the congregation, being self-appointed leaders of the congregation. Is that true? Who placed them in that position? God himself. God spoke to Moses out of the burning bush and told him to go and take Israel out of Egypt. And he told him to take Aaron, his brother, with him as his helper, as his voice. They didn't place themselves in that position. God did. And they're, in fact, accusing Moses and Aaron of doing the same thing that they themselves want to do. They're appointing themselves, or trying to appoint themselves, to a leadership position. And so now we come to a discernment lesson. As we look at this story, what do they do? The rebels assume a right to leadership, and they gather others to their cause. This is exactly what happened. What do the rebels do? They assume a right, they gather others to their cause. But God did not appoint them. What was Moses' response to hearing this from Korah, Dathan, and Abiram? What did he do? Verse 4. When Moses heard it, he fell on his face. He fell on his face. Because Moses had been with God, he knew God's power, he knew God's wrath, and he knew immediately this was not going to end well. This was not a good thing. He fell on his face. And he spoke, verse 5 then, to Korah and all his company, saying, tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and he will cause him, the Holy One, who is his, to come near to him. The one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. And so the Lord is going to settle this matter. God was going to settle it. How? The one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. And so here's another lesson that I drew out of here. I think we could draw this lesson out. Another lesson in discernment. The one who is of God is close to him. God draws him to himself, as God has drawn us to himself, called us to be close to him. God will cause that to happen, as he has done for us, and he's going to show in a demonstration of his power, who is his. How do we tell? How do we discern who is of God, who is of not, who is not? By their fruits, Christ said, you will know them. We can tell by the fruits in a person's life. The one who is close to God shows by their fruits, by the fruits of their lives. And we discern a false brother, false minister, in the same way. To show us whether or not there's a spirit of division there. Christ said to us, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, like this wolf who kind of looks like a sheep. Beware. You will know them, Christ said, this is Matthew 7, by their fruits. You will know them by their fruits. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits, and that's what we need to do, to discern who is of God and who is not, who is close to God and who is not. So back to the story now, Numbers 16. Moses tells Korah what his men should do. They want to be priests. That's what they want. They want to be priests. They want to take the leadership. So Moses is going to give them what they want. He's going to give them a priestly job. So he said to them, verse 6, do this. Take censers, Korah, and all your company. Take censers. Put fire in them, verse 7, and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the one whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. What does he say to them? You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi. You are appointing yourself to the priestly role, and God did not put you there. This is what he's saying. So these censers, what are they? They hold coals, and hot coals, and on those coals, the priest would put incense in the ritual of the temple service. There's another story in the scriptures that we could look to. We're going to look at this one in Leviticus chapter 12. If you would turn with me there, I don't think I've got this one on this verse. I'm sorry, Leviticus 10. I don't think this verse is here on the slide, but here's a photo of Nadab and Abihu. Nadab and Abihu offered profane fire before the Lord. We know that from Leviticus chapter 10. Each one of them took their censer and put fire in it. They put incense on it, and they offered profane fire before the Lord as he had not commanded them. That's verse 1 of Leviticus 10. And then verse 2, so fire, the story goes, went out from before the Lord and devoured them, and they died really instantly before the Lord for offering profane fire. So Moses says to Korah and his rebels, the man whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Aaron. And he's speaking to his cousin. And so Moses says, going back to the story, Moses said to Korah, now hear this, sons of Levi, verse 9. Is it a small thing that God has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself? To do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to serve him. So the Levite tribe had been set aside for the temple service. In verse 10, and that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brethren, the sons of Levi with you. And are you seeking the priesthood also?
they were Levites, but not all Levites are priests. All priests are Levites, but not all Levites are priests. They serve in the temple, the Levites do, in some form, some way in the wilderness. The Levites helped carry the temple as they moved from place to place. Or they helped in the offerings and bringing in the offerings of the temple to the temple. But not all Levites were priests. The sons of Aaron were the priests. And therefore, verse 11, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. And what is Aaron that you complain against him? He didn't say, who am I that you complain against me? What is Aaron, he said, that you complain against him? But what's their real complaint? What is it? They look at the work that God has given to them as a small thing. Moses asked them, do you think it's a small thing that God has given you this responsibility? And now you want the priesthood also? They're already in an honored position, but they want more. They want more. And that sounds familiar. That sounds familiar. Isn't this what Satan did when he rebelled? When Satan rebelled, he wanted to be in the place of God. He said, I will ascend. I will ascend to the heights of the clouds, and I will be like the Most High. That's what Satan said. That's Isaiah 14, verse 14. I will ascend and be like God. I will be in his place. So here's another discernment lesson. The imposter is discontent with his place, and he seeks to exalt himself. And unfortunately, I think we know, this has been a scourge in the church of God. There have been splits and divisions because many have sought to exalt themselves and put themselves in a place that God has not put them. All have honored positions in the church of God. The whole congregation is holy, as even Korah said to Moses. All indeed are holy, and God puts us where he will, where he wills. And so then, back to the story, then Moses sends for Dathan and Abiram, Korah's fellow rebels, the sons of Reuben. And so what is their response? Verse 12 of Numbers 16. And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram from the sons of Eliab, but they said, we will not come. We will not come up. It's outrageous. Extremely critical of Moses. They throw Moses' words then right back at him. It's very disrespectful. And so here's a discernment lesson. Another one. The rebellious unfairly criticize God's servants. Their response is outrageous. As we'll look here. Verse 13. They even call Egypt, where they had come from, where God had miraculously brought them, they called Egypt, which of course represents sin, the land of milk and honey. We know where this is going, don't we? It's not going to end well for the rebels. This is what they say. This is their disrespectful response. Throwing Moses' words right back at him. Verse 13, is it a small thing that you have brought us out of the land flowing with milk and honey? Is that a small thing? To kill us now in the wilderness, that you should also keep acting like a prince over us. Every word of that, every phrase of that, it's wrong. Moreover, you have not brought us into the land of milk and honey, nor given us the inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out our eyes? Will you put out the eyes of these men? Will you make them blind so they can't see where they really are? In other words, you're going to put their eyes out so they can't see we're in this desolate wilderness. We're not in the land of milk and honey. Who are you? This is the attitude. So disrespectful. And what does Moses do? What's his response? He takes the insult. He takes the insult. Doesn't lash back right at him in anger. Doesn't shoot back at him out of his own kind of carnal nature. What does he do? Numbers 12, verse 3, back a few verses or a few chapters here. We'll come back in a second here. But Moses, Numbers 12, verse 3, this is what it says of him. The man Moses was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. He doesn't lash back. He doesn't shoot out his lip at them. Doesn't, you know, throw a punch or whatever. He doesn't. What does he do? He goes to God. He takes his problem to God. And that's another lesson in discernment of godly leadership, or those who are of the truth, those, and those who are not. The one whom God chooses is meek and takes his troubles to him. And this is what verse 15 tells us back in the story of number 16. Verse 16 now. Then Moses was very angry, but he, again, didn't lash out. He went to God and he said to the Lord, don't respect their offering. Don't respect their offering. They're going to offer incense. Don't respect that offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, nor have I hurt one of them. So the donkey would be the beast of burden that would help the family. It was a very important animal. It'd be like taking a farmer's tractor away. I have not hurt one of them. But he was humble, even when they were disrespectful. And then Moses says to Korah, tomorrow you and all your company, this is verse 16, I don't have a slide for it, but you and all your company be present before the Lord, you and they, as well as Aaron, all of you, Reuben, the sons of Reuben and Dathan and Abiram and On and Korah and all your rebels, come before the temple and take your censer before the tabernacle. And verse 17 now. Let each take his censer and put incense in it. And each one of you bring his censer before the Lord. 250 censers. These brass or bronze censers that held the hot coals on which you threw the incense. Both you and Aaron, each with his censer. And so tomorrow comes. Korah and his men stand with Moses and Aaron then at the tabernacle. Verse 18. So every man took his censer, put fire on it, and laid incense on it. So the hot coals and the incense on top. And they stood at the door of the tabernacle of meeting with Moses and Aaron. And Korah, verse 19, and all the congregation gathered, all the congregation against them at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. He has the whole congregation backing him up. And then, verse 19, the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. The glory of the Lord appears. God is now going to answer. Korah had all the congregation behind him, but now God is going to act, and he will show who is holy before him. The glory of the Lord has now appeared. And the Lord speaks, and the response is devastating to Moses. Verse 20. Verse 20, and the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from this congregation that I may consume them in a moment. Get away from them because I am going to destroy them. Get away. What is their response? Verse 22. They fell on their faces. They knew the power of God and what God can do. And what do? Fell on their faces and intervened for the people. And this, well, verse 22 says, they fell on their faces and said, oh God, the God of all, of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin and you be angry with all the congregation? You know, if you relate that to Adam, one man sinned and the whole congregation was defiled, or all mankind after that. But God has a plan of salvation. And as we go through this story, we're going to see, even though God's judgment is severe against the rebels, the mercy of God is very apparent. And they pray, Moses and Aaron, will you be angry with all the congregation? So here's another discernment lesson. The ministers of God, or the godly people, intervene for the people. As we also moan and groan, sigh and cry for the things that are going on in the world, as we heard about in the sermonette. Those things are leading, we know, to destruction. The only way they could go if it continues. But still, we pray for the world. We sigh and cry for the things that are done in it. And what we see all through scriptures is that God's leaders intervene for his people, for the people. Daniel, remember his prayer, and it intervened for his people. Jeremiah, Paul, all wonderful examples of prayers. And Moses and Aaron, and of course Jesus Christ himself, even praying for those who were killing him as he died, that God would forgive them. God's ministers, God's people, intervene for the congregation. And what does God do? He hears their prayer and he relents. And so verse 23 continues, then Lord speaks to Moses, saying, verse 24, speak to the congregation, saying, get away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And so Moses now goes to warn the people. They have a reprieve, but they have to get away. Get away. So he goes to warn the people. Then Moses, verse 25, arose and went with Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. In verse 26, and he spoke to the congregation, depart now from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in their sins. Does that sound familiar? Revelation 18, verse 4, come out of her, my people. Romans 12, verse 2, do not be conformed to this world. 1 John 2, 15, do not love the world. In other words, get away. And this is another lesson in discernment. God's leaders, God's people, warn the people. And that's what we must do. That's what we are doing, putting out a message to warn the world, to get away, to come out of the world. As Moses and Aaron are pleading with them, get away from the tents of these wicked men. Don't touch anything of theirs, lest you be consumed in their sins. And so they got away from the tents around Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And in Dathan and Abiram, this is verse 27, no slide for this one, but Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents with their wives and their sons and their little children. And now Moses addresses the congregation in verse 28. And he says to them, "By this you will know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works. By this you will know, for I have not done them of my own will." Does that sound familiar? Moses gives credit to God. And this is what Christ would say. Here's another lesson in discernment. God's chosen give him the credit. Christ said, "The words that I speak, I do not speak on my own authority, but with the Father who dwells in me, he does the works." And Moses says, "You will see, God, I didn't do this of my own, not of my own will." And now God is about to render his judgment. So Moses continues in verse 29, "If these men die naturally, like old men," so if they grow old and die on their beds, "or if they are visited by the common fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But," verse 30, "but if the Lord creates a new thing, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into the pit, then you will understand that these men have rejected the Lord." So God's going to settle the matter and show who is his and who is not by this very dramatic display of his power. Well, here's another lesson for us. Destruction is the fate of the ungodly. And then verse 31, I don't have this slide either, but a photo here. "It came to pass as he finished speaking all these words, that the ground split apart under them." As soon as he finished speaking, the ground opens up. In verse 32, "And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the men of Korah with all their goods. And so they and all those who were with them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed over them. And they perished from among the assembly instantly." And then, verse 34, "Then all of Israel who had been gathered around there on their side fled at their cry, for they said, 'Lest the earth swallow us also.' So they all ran away. And a fire," verse 35, "came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense." The Lord had rendered judgment, and he showed who was his and who is not. So destruction was the fate of the ungodly. Moses and Aaron are still there. The smoke clears and the dust settles. And lying among the bodies, among the charred bodies, are those bronze censers. All those bronze censers that were still holy things because they were used in the service of the tabernacle. There is a photo of a censer with ashes for burning incense. And so the Lord said to Moses, saying, "Tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, to pick all those censers up, all 250, out of the blaze, for they are holy, and scatter the fire some distance away." The fire was not holy because it was offered profanely. So get rid of the coals and the incense. Throw that some distance away, but keep those bronze censers. And then verse 38. "The censers of these men who sinned against their own souls. And that's what they did. They destroyed their lives, their own souls, by rebelling against God. Let these censers then be made, verse 38 continues, into hammered plates as a covering for the altar because they presented them before the Lord. Therefore, they are holy, these bronze censers, and they shall be a sign to the children of Israel. What was the reason that he wanted this sign there? Why did God command this? Verse 39 now. So Eleazar the priest took the bronze censers from those who were burned up and had presented, those who had burned up had presented, and they hammered them out as a covering on the altar. Verse 40, that tells us why God wanted this, to be a memorial to the children of Israel, that no outsider who is not a descendant of Aaron should come near to offer incense before the Lord, that he might not become like Korah and his commandments, or companions rather, just as the Lord had said to him through Moses. This was to be a perpetual sign. Do not take that office on yourself. And when we look at our lives, we have to make sure that we are not taking anything upon ourselves that the Lord has not given us. We cannot even call ourselves children of God unless the Lord has called us. Truthfully, we cannot. We cannot, in other words, take his name in vain, represent him in a way that is wrong. But as God has called us to be holy and separate, then we need to be humble and, like Moses was, go to God, look to God, and not be like the world. Separate ourselves from the world. Never assume, the lesson is, an office for yourself that God has not appointed. And again, I think we could look at our legacy in the Church of God, and we see just too many examples of that. And amazingly then, as the story continues, the next day, the people blamed Moses and Aaron for killing these men. God had rendered the judgment, but on the next day, verse 41 says, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Lord. You've done it." And the Lord is ready to strike again. All the congregation comes, you know, they're still feeling rebellious. And so what is God's response? Skipping to verse 45, he says, "Get away from this congregation that I may consume them in a moment." And what was their response? And they fell on their faces. All three times in this story, we see Moses and Aaron falling on their faces, pleading with God, asking for mercy. This is what one who is called of God does. And that's what we need to do also, as we are in this world, not a part of it, but pleading for the world. Pleading for God's mercy on this world. And so, verse 46, as the story kind of winds down here, so Moses said to Aaron, "Take a censer and put fire in it from the altar. Put incense on it and take it quickly to the congregation. Make atonement for them, for the wrath has gone out from the Lord and the plague has begun." And so Aaron did as Moses commanded, verse 47. He took it as Moses commanded, and he ran into the midst of the assembly, ran to help save them. And already the plague had begun among the people, so he put incense in it and made atonement for the people. And the plague stops. And God regarded his chosen one, Aaron, and Moses, who were intervening for the people. And Aaron then, verse 48, stood between the dead and the living. And so the plague was stopped. So all the dead were on one side of Aaron, and the living were on the other. Aaron was there with that censer holding back the plague. Very dramatic, showing again God's judgment on the ungodly. And now those who died, verse 49, who in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the Korah incident. So nearly 15,000 were dead in the course of a day. And so Aaron, verse 50 then, the last verse of this chapter here. Aaron returned to Moses at the door of the tabernacle of the meeting, for the plague had been stopped. And God's chosen ones, his ministers, had intervened for the people, and God honored their prayer. We won't go into the next chapter, but the next chapter, verse 17, is about Aaron's rod that budded. And God is showing in another miracle how the rod of Aaron is the only one of the 12 rods of the leaders of the tribe that budded. Again showing who is the one whom God chooses. So the discernment lessons. The discernment lessons of the ungodly rebels, looking at their example, they assume a right to leadership, and they bring others into their cause. They try to get others to back them. They're discontent with their place. They want something more than what God has given, seeking to exalt themselves. That we see in this story. They unfairly criticize the servants of God. Remember Dathan and Abiram and their highly disrespectful answer to Moses. Just shooting his words right back at him in a very disrespectful way. And destruction is their fate. The discernment lessons for who is of God. The one who is of God is close to him. And how do we tell that? How do we tell that? By their fruits. The one who is of God takes his troubles to him. We could tell that that person, man or woman, is meek, takes their troubles to God, doesn't lash out and seek revenge, but takes his troubles to God. They intervene, God's ministers, God's people. They intervene for the people and warn them, as Moses and Aaron did in this story. And we are also in that place where we are called to warn the world. And they always give God the credit, just as Jesus Christ gives his Father all the credit. They don't take anything upon themselves or appoint themselves to any office that the Lord did not put them. We must discern between truth and error. And lessons like these in the rebellion of Korah show us that. God tells us to discern between the ministers of God and the ministers of Satan, between truth and error. John the Apostle, a true minister of Christ, loved the brethren, and he warned them. Heresy was creeping into the church, and that's why one of the very reasons he wrote his epistles, to help combat it. What does he say? 1 John 4, verse 1. He tells us to discern. In other words, believe not every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. Many false prophets have gone out into the world. Notice Paul's prayer for the Philippians. This is Philippians 1, verse 9. Philippians 1, verse 9. And this I pray, that your love may abound still more, and more in knowledge and in all discernment. Philippians 1, verse 9. That you, by this discernment, may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense until the day of Christ, discerning truth from error. Who are the ministers and people of God? And who are not? Who are Satan's? But we can apply these lessons to our lives that we can pull out or see in this story of the rebellion of Korah. But there's one more part of the story that needs to be told, because this part speaks of the mercy of God. When God caused the earth to open up, Dathan and Abiram and their families, Korah and the 250 men with him, they all died instantly. But the sons of Korah did not die. Let's look at Numbers 26 and verse 9. Numbers 26 and verse 9. Now, this is taking place during the census, the second census, while Israel was in the wilderness, just before they went into the promised land. They took the first census when they came out of Egypt, the second, or just not long after they came out of Egypt, and the second before they went in to the promised land. Notice verse 9 of Numbers 26. In this census, as they're tabulating it here, the sons of Eliab were Nemuel, Dathan, and Abiram. These are the Dathan and Abiram, representatives of the congregation who contended against Moses and Aaron in the company of Korah when they contended against the Lord. Then verse 10, verse Numbers 26. And the Lord opened its mouth, and he swallowed them together, up together with Korah, when that company all died, when that fire devoured 250 men, and they became a sign. Those censers were used as a sign, a covering for the altar as a sign, not to assume the right of leadership. But then verse 11, nevertheless, the children of Korah did not die. They didn't die. Why? Because they didn't go with their father in his rebellion. The sons of Korah, as time went along, became very prominent in the temple service. They were among the Levite gatekeepers in the temple after the temple was established in Jerusalem. They did not assume any office above what they were given. They were made, as Levites, gatekeepers in the temple. They weren't the priests, but still had a very high and honored position as gatekeepers. Notice this first. This is 1 Chronicles 9. 1 Chronicles 9 and verse 19. 1 Chronicles 9 and verse 19. Now, this was after the temple had been built in Jerusalem. And Shalom, the son of Korah, the son of Eliasaph, the son of Korah, and his brethren from his father's house, the Korahites, were in charge of the work of the service, gatekeepers of the tabernacle. Their fathers had been keepers of the entrance to the camp of the Lord. That means their fathers were in the camp of the Lord in the wilderness as gatekeepers, and through the generations, the sons of Korah did not deviate, did not seek office, but kept their place, their honored place, but did not assume a place of leadership above what they were given. And further, the sons of Korah became renowned singers in the temple. 11 of the Psalms are attributed to them, and from them we have the words to some of our most favorite hymns. From Psalm 42, we get, as the deer pants for the water. Psalm 42. Psalm 84. How lovely are thy dwellings. Psalm 46. God is our refuge. God is our refuge and our strength. Beautiful. The sons of Korah. Here's a photo of Earth from space. Let's take a look at Psalms 46 just for a moment, or you might turn in your hymnal. I'm not sure which hymn this is. But Psalm 46. God is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in trouble. And therefore, we will not fear, even though the earth be removed. And that day in the wilderness, hymn 27 in our hymnal, God is our refuge. That day in the wilderness, the earth did remove. And the sons of Korah would have known exactly who their father was. They would have known exactly what he did and what his fate was. And furthermore, they had that bronze covering on the altar as a reminder never to assume anything above what God had given them. When you put it all together, you see the mercy of God. God did not kill the sons of Korah because they did not go with their father's rebellion. They did not die with him. They would have seen the brass plate on the altar, on the covering of the altar. Do we have Numbers 26, verse 11? We have a slide for that one? The children of Korah did not die. For we know the mercy of God, that one day even the rebels will be given their chance. God has a plan that the earth will open again and give them an opportunity. And so I think you can look at this story as a complete picture of not only the severe judgment of God on rebellious behavior, on assuming something that's not given to you, but also his infinite mercy. This is truly, I think, a lesson in discernment that we could use for us and look at this story of the rebellion of Korah in that way. Let's go to one final verse. This is Malachi chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3, I'll have it on the screen for you. Verse 16. Then those who feared the Lord spoke often to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them. So a book of remembrance was written before him for those who heard the Lord, who meditate on his name. And our names should be in that book. Verse 17, they shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts, on the day that I make them my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. As God spared the sons of Korah. And then, verse 18, speaking to us, then you will discern between the righteous and the wicked, between the one who serves God and the one who does not serve him. Korah's rebellion, a lesson in discernment. Korah's sons discerned well. They chose correctly. Let's learn from this lesson of Korah and also choose correctly, be discerning. Let's learn from this story that shows the fate of the ungodly the severe judgment of God, but also his enduring mercy. And let's always, brethren, discern between the one who serves God and the one who does not serve him.